the energy for this upcoming November election. The energy, when I talk to some folks, I get a whole lot of excitement from folks that are calling in, and some folks that I run into on the street are feeling this, an energy for this. How would you assess the mood out on the street for this election, particularly in light of the national things that are happening right now? Are you feeling a pulse out here?
You know, it's interesting, and it varies depending on the individuals that you talk to, because it's not the energy that we need. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more energy in terms of people getting to the polls mm-hmm. to vote. And you know, I've talked to young and older individuals, particularly with what's going on in Washington, particularly with the Foley situation. And one of the individuals I spoke to is about 83, votes, always votes, you know, is going to vote. But she said she has just turned her television off. Mm-hmm. She said she doesn't want to hear anything about this pedophile, Foley, or what he was doing. She just finds it very disgusting. I also talked to some people who I believe are just staunch Republicans, pretty much, and they're like, I may be going out of town, I may not be voting. Then you have others that are saying, well, maybe we do need a balance of power. Maybe we do need, you know, we don't need a situation where the Republicans are controlling everything because they're out of control. You know, they have been deceitful to us, and, you know, we have supported them. So you get a mix of conversation. I don't feel the fever from young people mm-hmm. in terms of getting involved in mm-hmm. this election.
Mm-hmm. And it is, it's almost as if the energy for this election is going to, or not energy, but the, the energy for this election is going to come externally. You know, normally you have an energy that is pushed by knocks on the door mm-hmm. and feet on the street mm-hmm. and radio advertisement and all of that kind of constant energy. But it looks like the energy is going to come externally, because I think it's interesting that the 83-year-old person that you were talking to said she's going to turn the television off. She's going to vote.
She doesn't want
to hear about the pedophile piece. But the interesting piece about that is that I presume she's a Democrat, so she knows the importance of going out and voting and all of that. But the same information does the opposite with the Republicans. So that's an energy that is external from the feet on the street type of energy.
Particularly the so-called moral majority. Mm-hmm. You know, those individuals that said, you know, we're putting the Republicans in office because they're going to push this country toward a moral agenda.
We don't have to talk about stains on a blue dress.
Right.
We don't have to worry about how we're going to explain to our children about what went on in the White House. Well, how you like it now?
Month after month, every quarter, it seems that there's some explanation. You know, you got the president's Supreme Court nominee, you know, mm-hmm. what went afoul with that. They mm-hmm. were upset about that. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Harriet Myers.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of her name. Harriet Myers, you have that piece, and on and on and on. And more, this nation is saying, you know, straight up, Bush, you lied to us about going to war in Iraq, you know. And, you know, you got Bob Woodard's mm-hmm. book that has just come out about this situation. Hey, it just seems like, you know, you get a little push, a little shove, a little knock, and
it's externally.
It's external.
You know, it is really fascinating to see that the things that are going to end up driving this election. We have power-hungry little Roy Blunt out here saying, yeah, this is wrong. But when you look at the Republican dynamics, he's saying it's wrong because he wants the gig.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. And those who have come out and, you know, and made these points of, you know, yes, it's wrong. So it's going to be interesting whether or not the Speaker of the House, the U.S. House of Representatives, whether he's able to survive this, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, at least it was being reported that there were these steamy conference calls that were going on. And now it's like, oh, wait a minute, maybe we better rally around him. And yesterday, last evening, it was like, well, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't rally around him. So I think they're in a quandary. as to which strategy to approach. I think the Democrats are also in a very interesting situation because, you know, if they beat on this Foley situation too much.
Do you think?
I mean, to me, it is to me because, hey, we've had Democrats, what, 1984, we had a Democrat messing around with a page, you know? So, I think it should be out there, but I mean, hey, first of all, you know, this happened to be a Republican, and yes, there happened to be a cover. Yes, this is the party that talks about morality, but at the same time, Democrats have had similar situations.
Well, I guess my point is...
But they're just not in power.
Well, my point with this is that the way that it is a issue to be hammered upon by the Democrats is because it goes to the entire culture of corruption that the Republicans have created in being there. We're not talking just about Foley and Pages. But what we're talking about is how far will they go in their corruption?
Right.
Okay. We've had Duke Cunningham with all of the putting the bribe list on congressional letterhead. We've had Tom DeLay. We've had Congressman Foy. We've had all of this. So if it were just this issue, I'd be feeling that. But for me, I think you can use this, and and the Democrats should use this as the cherry on the top of a corrupted sundae, that this is the last straw. But this is the last straw in terms of clarity on how deep and how perverse the culture of corruption is for this party in control.
I agree with that, but what we have not seen from the Democrats is we have not seen, you know, really fashioning... And that's why I'm saying now to just trounce on this Foley piece alone, you know, to me, I find it distasteful. Now,
we got to take a break. We'll be back. I'm here. This is Eye on the Lube. This is Irene J. Smith. Stay with us.
It's never too late to praise the Lord, and that's why you hear the broadcast from the Evangelist Center Church of God in Christ, Sunday nights at 10 on WGNU. It's a full hour of worship with Elder Leon Stewart and his congregation, a message that's timely and timeless. Tune in and hear for yourself. Elder Leon Stewart and the Evangelist Center Church of God in Christ, Sunday nights at 10 on AM 920 WGNU.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension. These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Oss.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Eye on the Loo. This is Liz Brown. I am here with Irene J. Smith. Irene, welcome back. We have up in the Supreme Court right now, they're deciding a couple of issues that may determine how this election is going to go. They're determining the voter ID bill, and they're also determining another issue that's going to be on the ballot, the issue of this tax on cigarettes. The discussion, what I would like to hear from you is your assessment of what do you think in terms of the decision-making coming out of our Supreme Court. They're supposedly going to make this decision within the next couple of days. The voter ID bill, how do you think that's going to go?
I think they're going to strike it down. Mm-hmm. I think with the heavy questioning, you know, I think in the justices' minds is like, what is the justification, particularly for this issue of, you know, you need this birth certificate, the impact, the adverse impact it will have, particularly on seniors and individuals on fixed income. I think I'm expecting the justices to strike it down.
The other issue that's on the justices' plate for them to decide is whether or not the issue of shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to create a healthy future trust fund that will, one, be used to reduce and prevent tobacco use, to increase funding for health care access and treatment for eligible low-income individuals and Medicaid recipients, and to cover administrative costs, two, be funded by a tax of 4 cents per cigarette and 20% on other tobacco products, and three, to be kept separate from the general revenue and annually audited. That's one that they're also going to be decided if the signatures and everything is right for them, for this to stay on the ballot.
Right. And I think this is an issue of whether or not the ministerial act of the Secretary of State, whether or not there were sufficient signatures,
mm-hmm.
you know. It appears that there were
mm-hmm.
sufficient signatures, so that because of the makeup of the court, I believe that it'll be on the ballot.
And this is going to be a very interesting one, because the folks that are in opposition to this are making the argument that they don't, that the money is not going to be used for health care access. It's not going to be treatment, or it's not going to be used for that. And I think. And I think that that is that should be the question in terms of whether or not this is something that should be voted upon, because we have in our own history of when we voted for the lottery tax, people were under the impression that this was all going to be money that was going to go for education and it was going to help our kids. But that's not the devil was in the details of it. That's not what the money, all of the money from gambling does not go into the for education.
That's true, but it had to do also with the manner in which the language was crafted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depends upon the tightness of the language.
Mm-hmm.
I think this language here is a bit more tighter than the language that we saw with respect to, you know, lotteries and gambling in terms of the money going toward education. And as you normally had that, the second of the amendment that was defeated while you were in Africa, the language was a bit tighter, but still, folks had been played, so they voted it down.
Mm-hmm.
This language is a bit more tighter in terms of it being a dedicated fund for health care and Medicaid.
And the other piece of it is that the language in this, from the brief reading of it right there, says that the money would also be used for administration. And that always concerns me when if there's not a limit on the amount of money that is going to be spent on administration of this, of these monies, then conceivably we could have some crazy salaries out there, some crazy administrative costs out there that would diminish any of the money, or diminish the impact of the money's going for health care.
Certainly, that is all. I mean, that's always a consideration. And then I would say, even I think that they added this administrative cost to make sure that monies could be used, because in the delivery of these services, there is no way possible that these services could be delivered without incurring some type of administrative cost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding, my thinking, and I may not be correct, that this language was added to make it clear that monies could be spent on administrative costs. But I think your point is very well taken, that quite often we see situations that when taxes are passed, that a disproportionate amount of money goes into administration rather than going into the actual services that was intended to be provided.
1-877-920-WGNU. I want to, before we continue with our, I want to kind of jump here for a second, because this is something that I think is going to really be a revealing issue. We talked a little bit about this last week, but other things have come out since then. The issue of Lewis Reed and Shrewsbury. What I find fascinating about this discussion, Irene, is the how it's being played from white media, how it's being discussed in white media, and how it is being discussed in the community of African descent. Lewis Reed would run if he makes that decision. He would challenge Jim Shrewsbury, and Jim Shrewsbury has been described as, in one white publication, has been described as two-thirds, helping keep the two-thirds balance in on the board of E&A, and then if Lewis Reed wins, then there would be a black majority on the board of E&A. And just the phraseology of that is fascinating to me, because Irene, I look at this city, and you know, I've been to lots of different cities all across this country, and when you stop in hotels and you turn on the TV and you see the evening news, when you go to Detroit, you see nothing but black folks on the evening news. You go to Oakland, and you look at the different stations all over Oakland, you see a whole lot of black and brown faces on the evening news. Now, every news show that you turn to, you see a lot of black faces. Here in the city of St. Louis, we have, what, 60-40, about 60-40 black-white?
Approximately.
And you turn on the news stations, and you see a sea of white faces. I mean, it's just really, this city is so out of step in terms of cities all across this country. I mean, I'm not saying that everything good is happening in Chattanooga, Tennessee for black folks, but at least when you turn on the news, you do see more of black folks represented in that place.
And it's indicative of this entire state. I mean, Alderman Troop and I was looking at a picture of legislators from Mississippi, from the State House and from the Senate. Man, oh man, so many more African Americans in elective office in the state of Mississippi than in Missouri. Again, we have the situation about keeping the balance.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, the balance is, from the white media standpoint, the balance is two Caucasians.
Keeps it balanced.
However, it's out of balance if there are two African Americans, despite the fact that this city is predominantly African American.
Or even, you know, if there were all African Americans on E&A. If there were all African Americans on E&A, all of a sudden we start counting balance the more African presence that there is anywhere.
Any imbalance.
You know.
It's imbalance.
Yeah. And what it is going to be fascinating to see, because Lewis Reed is from, he's not from the North Side. He doesn't represent a North Side ward. He represents a South Side ward.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what folks do when they make their decision about this. This is Liz Brown, Eye on the Loop. I am here, of course, with Irene J. Smith. We will be back with our conversation. Stay with us.
morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Eckerd's. Westbound 70 at Airport, air flight, look for an accident. It's been cleared. Southbound 170 at Olive and Ladue, look for crews to set up a permanent lane closure throughout the day as weather permits. Eastbound 44 at River de Pere, look for an accident. Left lane's blocked. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, heavy traffic in the right lanes. Northbound 270 at 55 through Marshall, look for stop-and-go traffic in pockets. Westbound 270 at Old Hall's Ferry and New Florissant, look for heavy volume in pockets as well. Eastbound 70 at 79 and all the way back through Bryan Road, you can expect delays. Westbound East Bridge traffic is moving well into the downtown area and all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge. You can expect some delays at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Eckerd's. Bring the whole family to Eckerd's and take a tractor ride to the pumpkin patch. You'll find a perfect pumpkin plus plenty of fall fun. Eckerd's in Belleville, Millstadt, and Grafton. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Much cooler today, mostly cloudy throughout the day. Becoming partly sunny by this afternoon with a high in the mid-60s. This evening, partly cloudy, cooler with a low in the upper 40s. Friday, mostly sunny with a high around 70. And Saturday, mostly sunny, warmer with a high around 80. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 59 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 61. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. At 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU, 920 a.m.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Does your life need to be energized? Are you in need of some direction and clarity? Is it time to make a change? Tune in to Sort It Out with professional organizers Lori and Claire, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m., and we'll share with you everything we know from our expertise in organizing, be it life, home, or business, to us motivating and empowering you to go after your dreams and goals.
We are known as the dynamic duo, and we can rescue you from your organizing challenges. We want to encourage you to get real with your life and regain control.
The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
back. Welcome back. Welcome back to Eye on the Lou, Irene J. Smith. This Lewis Reed piece, to me, is really going to be revealing. As you look in certain white publications and you listen to what folks are saying, I believe that this is a race first city, you know, and it will be a fascinating thing to see Shrewsbury versus Lewis Reed straight up and down.
It will race. I mean, if it is a straight up and down race, and I'm certainly hoping that it is.
Me too.
It will be revealing, very revealing. But I think it's going to be even more revealing, not only from the race factor, mm-hmm. but it's going to be revealing in terms of individuals from our own community, mm-hmm. where they stand. And the issues, how they take positions in terms of supporting Jim Shrewsbury, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, he's been a consensus builder. Jim Shrewsbury is looking out for all of the city, and I don't see that. I see mm-hmm. Jim Shrewsbury as shrewdly placing himself in a position where he's the vote that is needed to vote, to break a tie vote. And he'll tell you, I'll be with you if you have all of your votes.
Right.
Now, if someone is with you and they're supporting you and they're trying to move an agenda forward that's in the best interest of the city, then they will take a stand.
And if we can just take a second here to analyze Shrewsbury's political calculation, I think that race calculation, and with the familiar result that the white minority would get to make the final decision, when we look at how he puts together the committees at the Board of Aldermen, it is very, very politically calculated to allow the power to still remain with
absolutely,
white.
Absolutely. I mean, people say, well, you know, we have 50-50. Well, I mean, you know, you can't get anything out with 50-50, particularly if all members of the committee show up. It places him, it empowers him even more,
mm-hmm.
because basically he puts himself in a position where he is the tiebreaker.
And the other piece of this, from my perspective, Irene, is that if, let's say, the HUD committee were controlled by
HUD's
committee, okay. HUD's committee, if it were controlled by black alder people, and let's say the streets controlled by white Southside alder people, if we had a balance within the different committees of power in the hands of black folks, power in the hands of white folks, everybody's empowered because you got to work with all of these committees.
Exactly.
You have something that's going to need to be coming through somebody's committee. So you're going to have to work with people that you haven't had to work with before. Everybody is empowered when power is distributed like that.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that Lewis Reed said is really right on point. And there is an absence of a legislative agenda for this city.
Mm-hmm.
The president of the Board of Aldermen does not take any leadership in crafting legislation and a legislative agenda that will benefit all of St. Louis. And we have not seen that. It has not existed. It needs to exist, but it has not heretofore existed.
Mm-hmm. I think that it is going to be a very, very, very interesting and revealing race. It's going to be interesting to see how the white politicians compare and contrast the experience and mm-hmm. the resumes of both of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Shrewsbury's an attorney. That doesn't give you any kind of advantage.
An attorney who's basically handled probate stuff.
There
so
you go.
What?
So exactly. So what? What does Lewis Reed bring to the table?
I mean, Lewis Reed is a computer consultant.
Mm-hmm.
He's done, I think, some development with family members or whatever. He's developed his ward. Of course, the challenges that he has faced in the 6th ward, certainly Shrewsbury has not faced in the 16th ward. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, Shrewsbury certainly has served on ENA. Lewis Reed has not. Lewis Reed has served on the Ways and Means Committee as vice chair until Shrewsbury removed him. Part of a deal with Jennifer Florida, it's our understanding. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how Lewis Reed is described and how Shrewsbury is described both in the Caucasian press and in the African American press.
Mm-hmm. And looking at just, I've gone to a couple of local blogs, and I'm looking at how people are. And again, this is 6 months out. We're not talking about a year out. We're talking 6 months out. And it looks as if it is going to be the usual. It is absolutely going to be the usual.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to see how it frames up. But race does matter in this city. There is no doubt about it. I have talked about, many others have talked about, this city is not going to move forward in a collective way until race is not the trump card.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as race remains the trump card in this city will not move forward.
There has to be a fearlessness in this city of looking at the race issue face on.
Face on.
And addressing it.
Face on.
And that's why I started with a conversation this morning, Irene, with just the general observation about what the media looks like in this town. It looks like the committees on the Board of Aldermen and worse. You know, because how can you have a number one a television station, Channel 5? They're called the number one because based on the ratings, you have two black people in their lineup of folks, of faces that come to us. You know, you look at other television stations, and it's the same type of visibility. You know, there just isn't a whole lot of black presence on any of these news networks. You have a couple of specialists every once in a while, but not an everyday presence.
Mm. It's certainly going to be quite revealing in terms of how this will impact the city and whether or not we will see the usual of race being the trump card, as you say. St. Louis, it's gonna be interesting. But as I said earlier, it's gonna be even more interesting to see the response from individuals from our own community that are saying things like, "Well, Shrewsbury is my friend." You know, I'm like, "Your friend? Okay. From a personal perspective, what are you talking about? Oh, he's been a friend of the. He wasn't a friend of the African American community."
I saw in the blog they're talking about.
This point, Liz. He wasn't a friend of the African American community when he, as president of the Board of Aldermen, voted for a redistricting bill that stripped the African American community of the and the city of St. Louis of the most Democratic voting ward in this city, which was the 20th Ward.
Absolutely. And also how he was concerned about other white aldermen losing a block. So he fought for white aldermen losing a block.
Namely Joe Rohde.
Joe Rohde. He came up and took a position. So we know that he can take a position.
Right.
So the question is that who does he take a position at the expense of?
Right. And exactly as I indicated to you last week, I went to Shrewsbury and said, "This is an opportunity for you to show your leadership skills. You're concerned about this entire city and in terms of fair representation for everyone in the city and particularly the African-American community." And, of course, we went from 13 black aldermen down to 12 as a result of that redistricting bill.
Mm. And the other point that I was going to make was I'm seeing folks give Shrewsbury credit for, well, he voted for the Civilian Review Board.
Because
they had the votes.
I tell you this, if they needed the 15th vote and Shrewsbury was that 15th vote,
it wouldn't have gotten it.
I bet my bottom dollar, I bet my penny loafers, which is one of my favorite pair of shoes, that he would have not have voted for the Civilian over. So his position is going to be, well, they had the votes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a political vote. It wasn't a vote because he didn't jump on. Just follow the history of that. Follow the history of the Civilian Oversight Bill. You know, Shrewsbury jumped on that because it was politically expedient to do so and not because he would not have been the decisive vote.
And we're seeing folks talk about Shrewsbury's relationship with Slay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We're taking a break. This is Eye on the Lou, Irene J. Smith. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us. We'll be back. to the mall to visit your Sears, why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else indeed. Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace. Get on down to 3425 Union, 3425 Union Sears. My name is Liz Brown. When you get there, tell Jerome Williams I told you to.
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move, one day the engineer wanted a bite to eat. He let the monkey sitting on the...
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. This is Liz Brown. Irene J. Smith, welcome back. Welcome back. This is, again, one of these times that it is going to be a long, just considering the fact that it's going to be a long and interesting road if this election between Louis Reed and Jim Shrewsbury turns out to be just the two of them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, very definitely.
Because this is different than the Mike McMillan piece, isn't it?
Of course. Mike had no opposition.
But I just mean in terms of it coming to be.
He was the chosen
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. So this feels like it is going to be a pure race.
It appears that way.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely appears that way. And it's interesting, you know, the little word on the street is that supposedly John Triplett, who's with the pipe fitters, mm-hmm. his daughter, it's my understanding that his daughter may be running in the 6th Ward,
mm-hmm.
African-American. In fact, it's John Bass's granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hearing,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting if Louis Reed decides to run for president of the Board of Aldermen. Also, who his replacement will
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, it's going to be an interesting race, particularly if it's straight up.
Mm-hmm.
If it's straight up.
How would you compare the, because I believe that the race when you ran for mayor, Francis Slay was your opposition, that was a pure race too. How would you compare this race to that race?
I think it's going to be a little different. I think there are going to be more African-American aldermen that will be willing
mm-hmm.
to come out and support Louis Reed.
Mm-hmm.
I think Louis Reed is going to have more money than we had.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be, I think, a reluctancy on the part initially until they hear Louis Reed and get some confidence in Louis Reed. There's going to be some reluctancy from the grassroots
mm-hmm.
Individuals in our community, and rightfully so. I think that the media, initially the media just really kind of took a position of kind of, ignoring us, mm-hmm. so to speak. I don't think that's going to be the case here. If there is a straight-up race between he and Shrewsbury, there's going to be, I believe, greater coverage mm-hmm. of it than there was in the mayoral race. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what position the comptroller takes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that she will come out and out and support Shrewsbury. They've had a fairly decent working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I will see, I believe that I will see that individuals who are aligned very closely with the comptroller might perhaps be working with Shrewsbury.
Mm-hmm. And the insofar as that discussion, it will be interesting to see how public any of them, because it's going to be tricky.
It's going to be very tricky.
It's going to be very politically tricky for we have, and it's not like your race. You know, there is, you can't say that the person is not qualified
right.
to run this. You cannot say that the person does not have the ability to do this job.
Right.
So how are you going to take a position in opposition to this?
Right.
You
right.
know, and then how are you going to articulate that in terms of its impact on our community?
Exactly.
Because isn't our community, wouldn't the community be better served with a person that had an interest in bringing real parity and real balance to representation of the entire city?
Right. And certainly, because if there is an agenda that is a citywide agenda, and when you look at the conditions that exist in the African-American community, someone who would be willing to say, look, we as a city need to address the deficiencies
mm-hmm.
that exist in our community, certainly the African-American community is going to be much better served.
Because Shrewsbury doesn't say that.
Of course he doesn't mm-hmm. say that. I mean, Shrewsbury says only when necessary to say.
Now, one of the things that Shrewsbury has been doing is you know, the Hallelujah Trail.
Yeah, know? He's been visiting, to my knowledge, I don't know if it's other churches, but I know he's been visiting the black Catholic churches, I think, once a month,
mm-hmm.
attending church on the north side once a month. He's been to my mother's church several times. I know I've seen him at St. Elizabeth's when I was there visiting the old St. Engelbert's church. He's been up to, you know, I think Holy Cross
mm-hmm.
and other churches as reported by friends of mine. So, yeah, he's been doing the same thing, you know. And so I guess you won't be able to say, well, he only comes during election time, because he's been taking that little trail at least once a month. He tracks over to North St. Louis. And it's interesting, you track over here to be seen in our churches, but you're not tracking over here to come to fashion any solutions to address problems that exist in our community.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't even think you have an understanding of the problems that truly exist in the African-American community, particularly when you look at the 16th Ward. I mean, the challenges, you know, I can remember letters that I got when I was the administrative judge from Shrewsbury. You know, I mean, right, I mean, a problem of a dog not being on a leash can be problematic. But in the scheme of things and the problems that exist in our community.
Well, talk to us about that, because I don't understand what you mean.
Say for an example, as when I was the administrative judge, mm-hmm. they were talking about enforcing the leash law. You know, mm-hmm. there's a leash law. So I received a letter from Shrewsbury, which I probably still have because I'm a pack rat, that said, asking that the judges issue heavier fines to individuals who did not have their dog on a leash. And I'm saying, as compared, I wish that was the major problem in our community, that a dog wasn't on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish that was the major problem, as
so
opposed to.
So you never got another letter from him pertaining to other issues outside of mm-hmm. dog leash enforcement.
It was something about a dog. Mm. And certainly that can be that could be very annoying to have somebody's dog leave a load on your lawn
mm-hmm.
or running up and down the street or getting into your flowers or whatever. That can certainly be a problem. But, you know, in our community it's more.
Well, what kind of issues did you represent when you were or came before you when you were administrative judge?
Man, I mean, from folks stealing people's, you know, lawn equipment to folks, you know, playing loud music to, you know, rattling music, speeding, drunken driving.
Prostitution.
Prostitution. I mean, massive problems with prostitution in this city. So much so that, you know, we had, they teased me and said I had a prostitution docket where I did, where I consolidated, because basically it was all the same people being arrested over and over again.
But there was a problem. And so, and I guess the point I'm hearing is that you never received a letter from Shrewsbury about we need to keep focusing on this, we need to, and these sound like real, true quality of life issues,
you know. And certainly, I'm sure that when a dog, a dog running on your line, dropping them, that's a quality of life issue as well, but it is not to the extent of,
and the priority
folks
of quality
urinating in public, you know, prostitution, speeding up and down your street, stealing your rake, stealing your lawnmower, stealing your weed eater, you know. Just trying to enjoy, you know, one of the things that is impacting our community now is the stealing that is going on, and the police department saying, basically call you, say, well, do you have insurance? If you say, yeah, well, they say, well, okay, we'll give you a complaint number. Don't come out, no fingerprints. I mean, you have to actually push to have a tech come out, you know, to do the crime scene work.
And we're not even talking about somebody stealing a lawnmower out of your, or less than $100 lawnmower out of your front yard. If someone breaks into your house and steals stuff out of your house worth hundreds and thousands of dollars, they won't come and take a report.
I mean, you have to basically clown.
Yes, you do.
For them to come. And so it's the lack of service. There is no city agenda. There's no citywide legislative agenda that is being pushed by Shrewsbury.
And I think it's because, well, it's obvious. There's a whole race piece of it. And also, it is because there is such a polarization of South needs, North needs. We don't need that in any part of South St. Louis that I'm concerned about getting votes. You know, I represent, Shrewsbury says, I represent a ward that our biggest issue is dogs defecating on people's lawns. That's the big issue out there. So there's this polarization, North versus South.
It sure
and
is.
South, from his perspective, doesn't have any issues. So why would anybody else have any issues? This is going to be the race to watch. This is going to be the story to follow. Irene J. Smith, International Urban Institute this Saturday?
Saturday.
All right. From 9 to 11 at 1020 North Taylor. Irene J. Smith, thank you so much. See you next week.
All right.
All right.
Beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister.
The truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, the Riverview Gardens School Board will conduct an independent investigation into the suspension of two high school employees. School Board President Gilda Hester and Board Member Tommy Pearson say the investigation will center around the handling of allegations of inappropriate behavior by band director James Garrett and Associate Principal James Gant. Pearson says he believes the police investigation is being obstructed.
I don't wish to give names, but there are concerns that there are people who are interfering with this investigation, threatening students to try and stop them from coming forth with information.
The board will hold a special meeting at the district central office tonight at 6:30. Visitors to the St. Louis Zoo won't be able to see the new baby elephant for the next several days. Zoo officials say Malia and her mother Ellie will be off display and under observation. The calf hasn't been gaining weight to the zoo staff's satisfaction. Finally this hour, a local public interest advocacy organization is launching a new platform designed to lessen U.S. dependence on foreign oil. Maya Bulow, a spokesperson for the Missouri Public Interest Research Group, is calling on all congressional candidates to commit to developing renewable fuels. The four phases to MOPERG's new Energy Future platform are reducing dependence on oil, harnessing clean and renewable energy, living more efficiently, and investing in a new energy future. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Is it time for new shocks and struts? This month at Napa, you can get mail-in rebates of up to $60 on the purchase of Napa Sensitrac and Reflex shocks and struts. Napa, get the good stuff. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 3 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Eckerd's. Southbound 170 at Olive and Leduc, crews are working to set up permanent lane closures for during daytime as weather permits. Westbound 44 at Bowles, look for a disabled vehicle on the right shoulder. Spady onto the ramp to westbound 40, look for an accident on the right shoulder. Eastbound 44 at Mraz Overpass and Merrimack River Bridge, look for heavy volume going on. Eastbound 40 between Clarkson and Mason, look for be slow, and then again from Ballast through Handley. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry all the way through Marshall Road, look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and New Florissant, look for heavy traffic in pockets. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge as well as into the King Bridge, you can expect delays this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Eckerd's. Bring the whole family to Eckerd's and take a tractor ride to the pumpkin patch. You'll find the perfect pumpkin plus lots of fall fun. Eckerd's in Belleville, Millstadt, and Grafton. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday, look for much cooler today, mostly cloudy throughout the day, partly sunny by this afternoon with a high in the mid-60s. For this evening, cooler, partly cloudy, low in the upper 40s. For Friday, mostly sunny, high around 70. And Saturday, mostly sunny, warmer with a high near 80. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 60 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 60 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather, or your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love, peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife and my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. And if you want to toll free long distance me, do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget that on Saturday we have the International Urban Institute. That's right, the International Urban Institute, where we meet and we organize and we fight for the issues that we have to address. We have much stuff that we need to tend to, and so be there Saturday. What's the address? The address is 1020 North Taylor. That's 1020 North Taylor, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. We have all kinds of committees for you to participate on. We have our education committee. We have our political academy committee. We have our economic development committee. We have our reparations committee. We have we have our health committee. We have our elders board committee. We have our bylaws committee. We have all of these different committees for you to participate in and help change the world, the political world that we find ourselves in. So you don't want to miss that every Saturday at 9 a.m. The address is 1020 North Taylor, 1020 North Taylor. We are blessed that the Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality allows us to join them, or to join together and organize at their facility. That's every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. So be there at 9 o'clock this Saturday. We have much business to tend to. And this is the time that we talk about one particular issue, the issue of the death penalty. I am joined every Thursday at this time by Jamala Rogers to talk about the issue of the Reginald Clemens case. And this Thursday is no exception. But before we do that, Howard, I think we need to take a break. Can we do that? Can we take a break here before we get to that? Because we're going to have a very special show this morning. So we'll be right back. Stay with me. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Hi, this is Lizbeth Tanz, co-host of Women Inspiring Women's Authors on the Air program. Each Friday, my co-host Connie Mitchell and I explore the world of writing and interview local and not-so-local authors. We discuss relevant, timely, and occasionally controversial subjects, so come hear just what it takes to write a book and learn something new along with us. Who knows? You might find a new favorite author. That's Authors on the Air, Fridays from 1 to 2 on AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Justice for Reggie Thursday. As always, I am joined by Jamala Rogers. Jamala, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Very good. This morning, talk to us about the journey that we're going to take and the story that we're going to tell this morning.
This is a 23-year-old saga, and it involves a rape case of Johnny Briscoe, and Johnny will tell some of that story along with his two sisters here in the studio, Ruth and Barbara, who have really been, along with other members of his family, really rocks of Gibraltar as they sort of entered into this nightmare, which is a nightmare into the criminal justice system. And we've heard those kinds of stories here before where you may have never had any encounter and all of a sudden, boom, you there and don't know where to go. So this case started 23 years ago in St. Louis County when there was a rape of a white woman. And the irony of this is that the rapist talked to this woman after he had raped her, smoked a cigarette, and told her his name. Now, that right there ought to raise some red flags and some whistles for a police officer, but that wasn't the case.
And I think it's important for people to understand, as we're telling this story, this is connected to the Reginald Clemens case from this perspective. People think that it could never happen to you, that I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm not going to get caught up in this, I can't get caught up in this system, it won't happen to me.
I'm minding my own business.
I'm minding my own business, I'm not doing anything wrong, and if I go and tell the truth will free me. And obviously nobody's going to be put in jail for real for something that they didn't do. And if they are put in jail, they will be freed very shortly, because the truth will come and we will be free as a base.
And even before then, Liz, a lot of people think that once people hear my story, a jury hears this, they will see that I'm telling the truth and everything will be okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is another one of those stories, that a reality check, if you will, of the world that we live in. It is not like that. And so let's start with this story of Johnny Briscoe. And Johnny, I want to start by welcoming you to the show.
Thank you.
When we talk about this story, Jamala talks about it being an over 20-year story. Start at the beginning. First, I think I want people to know who. Tell us about Johnny Briscoe in 1983. What was going on with you? What was your life like? Who was Johnny Briscoe?
I was a family man, married, and doing my daily routine, working, looking for work, and didn't have it. Going
by one morning, I was going through some changes with my wife, so she had a restraint order put on me, and I was over to my mother's house, and one night, October 27th, police come knocking on the door saying that they wanted to talk to me about a rape that went down in Maryland Heights, Missouri. And being the guy that I am, you know, I'm not affiliated with, you know, doing females like that, mm-hmm. you know. And I thought it was a joke, mm-hmm. you know. And they wanted me to put on some clothes, come down to the
Did they ask you, are you Johnny Briscoe?
Right.
Okay, and you said...
Yes, I am.
When the police knocked on your door and you said... and they asked you, are you Johnny Briscoe? And you said, yeah. Did the thought of, I need to get a lawyer, enter your mind?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't indulge in acts like that. You know, that's not me.
So when they said what they wanted you for, you knew that you hadn't done it, so what you need a lawyer for?
Exactly.
Did you ever come to regret that? Well, not talking to a lawyer?
Not really, because here at the end, everybody know, mm-hmm. you know that I'm not the guy that, you know, that did that.
Uh-huh.
And to retain a lawyer, that's fees, you know, that's coming out pockets, you know, mm-hmm. expense.
Mm-hmm.
So
they knocked on your door, they asked you who you were, they told you what they wanted you for, and you went with them.
I went with him.
Okay. Now, when you were home with your sister, Ruth?
No, I was home with my mother.
With your mother. I'm sorry. Okay. So was there any other family members there?
Well, my nephew was there, my stepfather, and my mother.
Okay. Okay. So you told them where you were going?
Well, they had got a call saying that the police was on their way over there.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. So you went with the police. What happened then?
So they took me down to the 6th District, and they questioned me about, you know, something that went on in Maryland Heights, about the rape in Maryland Heights. And, you know, I told them I don't know anything about that. You mm-hmm. know, I've never been to Maryland Heights.
Mm-hmm.
I have no reason to go out in Maryland Heights. I don't know nobody out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, I stayed.
Did they threaten you when they were talking to you? Did they call you a liar when they were talking to you? What was the questioning like?
It was so uneasy for me to, you know, sit there and just go through the formality as far as asking questions about, you know, what was you at that night? What was you doing? You know.
Were they mean to you?
No, they wasn't mean.
Okay.
They just asked me questions, you know,
mm-hmm.
about what went on in Maryland Heights, about the incident.
Mm-hmm. So then what happened?
So I told him, I just told him what I didn't have nothing to do with it, and I know nothing of it.
Okay. You know? So did they let you go home?
No, they kept me.
Okay.
You know, I was charged with that.
Mm-hmm. So, when did they let you make a phone call?
No, I didn't make no phone call. I don't believe I did.
So that was actually the last time your family saw you as a free man.
Right.
Until a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So they locked you up. They charged you with that. When were you able to talk to anybody again? After they locked you up and charged you with it?
Well, the next day.
Okay. So who did you call?
I called my mother.
Okay. And what did you tell her?
I told her, well, you know, they, you know, took me from your house and arrested me on rape and robbery and, you know, a whole bunch of charges.
Did you have any criminal record?
Yeah, I had previous, you know,
okay,
prior.
What did you have? What kind of prior did you have?
A stolen auto and trying to snatch some money, you know, strong-arm robbery.
Okay. Had you done any time?
Yeah. 2 years and 3 years, you know.
Okay, so you had a record.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I owned up to my responsibility for that.
Okay, so and you were you on paper at that time?
No.
Okay, so you'd completed all of that.
Right.
Okay. So, when you called your mom, what were you thinking then? Were you thinking that I'm gonna have to get a lawyer, or were you thinking I'm gonna get out of this? What were you thinking?
Well, Mom said she was returning me a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and I told her we don't need no lawyer. You know I didn't do this. My nephew know I didn't do this. My stepfather know I didn't do this. And I know this. And anybody that know me know that that's not my character.
And, as a lawyer, when I'm hearing you say that, I just want to bang my head against the table. I just really want to bang my head against the table because when anybody gets charged with something that they didn't do,
right.
The first thing you need is a lawyer. The first thing you need is a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not alone. A lot of people think, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
What I need a lawyer for?
What I need a lawyer for.
And the reason that we're making a big point about this is because we've been using Reggie Thursdays to educate people about their civil and human rights as it relates to the criminal justice system. And many folks who are listening, and some of them who are already incarcerated, underwent similar circumstances.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I can think about all the cases that I've dealt with from Ellen Reasoner on down. People felt like I didn't do it. Therefore, they're going to see that. It's going to come to light, and I'm going to be free. And then 15, 20, 23, in some cases 28 years later,
right.
then, you know, your life is gone, and then it's the oops syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. And also, this is an educational opportunity for folks out there listening about what shouldn't be done. You know, we never, ever think right. that a system that is designed to put people in jail and keep them there is going to help keep you out of jail. Their job is to put people in jail. So they're never going to be about now, legally, the prosecutor is supposed to be about truth.
Right.
But 90% of the time, they're about prosecution.
Yeah.
You know, not about the truth.
By any means necessary.
By all means necessary, and all means legal and illegal in some cases.
Yeah, you know, what happened to me can happen to anybody, rich or poor.
There you go.
Falsely accused.
So what would you tell somebody today if they said, you know what, I didn't do it, I don't need a lawyer. What would you tell them today?
Get a lawyer. Retain you an attorney.
All right. And we have your sister here, Ruth.
Yes.
Okay, Ruth. As you're listening to this, and we're taking a trip down memory lane here, when you hear your brother say, you know, I didn't need a lawyer, what do you think today?
Most people. Believe in the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really believe that the system is there to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And he know he didn't do it, and everybody that knows him know that he didn't do it. So he figured, you know, this is just a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need a lawyer. I didn't do this. You know, and
just a norm. You know?
Yeah, and me myself, I would probably have done the same thing that he did, like not retain a lawyer, because not knowing that you really need a lawyer, mm-hmm. believing that the system is there in place to help you, mm-hmm. you know, but.
And so do you remember back when he called and told everybody he was being charged with this? What did you think at the time?
I was like, that's just ridiculous. First of all, this was a white woman, lived in Maryland Heights. Johnny is really pro-black. Mm-hmm. He don't even, mm-hmm. he never dated a white woman. He don't deal with white women, mm-hmm. you know, on that level, you mm-hmm. know. So that was kind of ridiculous to us, you know. And then we live North St. Louis near downtown, 70, you know. And this is way out here in Maryland Heights, far from home, and he didn't have a vehicle at the time.
So he didn't even have a car?
Didn't have a vehicle at the time. No, sure didn't.
And he had an alibi at the time?
Yes, he did.
And his alibi was what?
His family, and that's what they didn't believe, the family. He was there with his mother, his father, and his nephew, but they didn't believe, okay, your family's going to lie for you. That's what they that kind of thinking.
Well, more specifically, there was a question about where he was that night. And I think people need to be clear on this, because I've often posed the question, do you know where you were 2 days ago? And for me, if I didn't have this Palm Pilot, I would be scratching my head thinking, what was I doing? Where was I?
Right.
Because he answered the question wrong. And the question was, where were you? And he said he was watching television. I think it was a football game. He said the wrong team.
No, that was my nephew. In fact, they were. It was the World Series was going on all that week. And, you know, different nights, the different teams were winning. And my nephew's, his name is Lindell Briscoe, and he's not a baseball person. Man. You know, most African-American men that I know are into football and basketball. Mm-hmm. We don't know anybody that's really into baseball. Mm-hmm. We're not a baseball family.
Mm-hmm. You know? It was a series.
Yeah, then it's because it was the World Series was on and wasn't much of anything on TV, they were, you know, they were watching it.
Fairly to say that they were half watching it.
Yeah, that's exactly. Mm-hmm. And when they only used three out of 10 witnesses in my whole family, they only used three.
Who's that? Who was the attorney representing you at that point?
Her name was Stormy White. She was a public defender.
Stormy's name has come up before.
Yeah,
Stormy's name has come up before.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that. We're going to take a break, and we will be back with the story of Johnny Briscoe. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. Stay with us.
St. Louis, 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Tahiti Village. Southbound 170 at Olive and Leduc. Crews are scheduled to set up permanent lane closures during the daytime as weather permits. Eastbound 44 at Mraz Overpass and Merrimack River Bridge. Look for traffic to be easing. Eastbound 40 from Brentwood through to Laclede Station. There's congestion going on there. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44, look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and New Florissant, look for traffic to be easing. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for some delays going on there as well. Westbound 40 at Laclede Station and Hanley, look for slow traffic in the right lane. Northbound 170 at Forest Park Parkway and Page, look for slow traffic due to road construction. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays as the morning rush continues. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Tahiti Village. Why haven't you called Tahiti Village yet? You've heard Tanya Roberts on the radio offering couples complimentary 3-day, 2-nights hotel in Las Vegas. So call today, 877-57-VEGAS. That's 877-57-VEGAS. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Much cooler, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny by the later this afternoon with a high in the mid-60s. This evening, partly cloudy, cooler with a low in the upper 40s. Friday, mostly sunny, high around 70. And Saturday, mostly sunny, warmer with a high near 80. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 60 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 62. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Want to take me to the game? Then log on to WGNU.net. AM 920 has teamed up with Tickets Now to help you find all the Cards playoff tickets you want. WGNU.net for the tickets that matter most to you. I'm waiting.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays at 12 noon for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. I learned at an early age that animals matter to me. Every week we'll share your stories. We'll discuss issues that matter most to you and your companion animals, from breed-specific laws to puppy mills, and answer your questions about pet care as well. You'll also enjoy our special guests as they share their tales. It's an hour of fur, friends, and fun every week. Join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales, every Friday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Justice for Reggie Thursday. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. And we're talking about the case of Johnny Briscoe, the fact that Johnny Briscoe was charged with a rape in 1982. And we're talking about, all of the things that go wrong on a regular basis in getting people into jail to do dozens of years for crimes that they did not commit. Johnny, there must have been some way, because as a prosecutor trying a case, you need more than a victim saying that the guy told me, the guy who raped me told me his name was Johnny Briscoe. Was there an identification? Did they pick you out? Did somebody pick you out of a lineup? What happened with that?
She picked me out of a photo spread, a five-individual photo spread.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the guy was dark-skinned, little sideburns, and a little mustache.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 130 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 5'8".
Mm-hmm.
I'm light-skinned, you know, brown-skinned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm nowhere near dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a predominant gold open-faced crown in my mouth at the time, and a goatee.
Uh-huh.
You know.
And a big crow.
Yeah, and I could never be 130 pounds when I was 165 pounds, you know.
So she picked you out at, and then my favorite part about this twisted story is that they also did another lineup of you, right?
Yeah, physical lineup.
And this is like something out of, In Living Color, or something out of a Saturday Night Live skit.
Right.
That people don't believe that stuff like this really, really happens. Describe for our audience what the physical lineup was like. Because she picked you out of a photograph, and then they put you in a physical lineup. What were you wearing in the physical lineup?
I was wearing a loud orange jumpsuit.
That all people incarcerated wear.
Right.
And you weren't in the line. There were three other people in the lineup with you.
Right, with
what
street
were they wearing?
Clothes.
They were wearing,
you know,
street clothes.
You know.
That sounds like
and
something out of a Saturday Night Live or In Living Color skit.
Yeah.
How on earth is that a fair lineup where you're wearing an incarcerated orange jumpsuit and the three other people are wearing civilian clothes? Were the rest of them black?
They were black.
Okay, but that's the only thing.
That's right.
You know, the only thing missing from the comedy routine would be that they were all white and you would be the only black person. But for all practical purposes, you said, "I'm guilty," standing there in that orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, I was just
and
like,
pick me.
I was so dumb standing out, you know.
And so, needless to say, she picked you.
And she picked me. She was informed that we got him come down and interview him.
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
So when they let her know that we have him come down, then, you know, when she get down and she got an orange jumpsuit, automatically.
Of course,
you know,
it says guilt. Pick
she
me.
Would, yeah, she would finger me, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the one.
Absolutely. And to me, that tells me that the victim must have been saying to the cops, I can't identify him. Mm-hmm. Or she picked a couple of different people, so they wanted this lineup to be clear of who she was going to pick, and it can't get more clear than that. Mm-hmm. The only guy in the orange jumpsuit. Did y'all know about this before the trial?
No, we didn't. The only thing we knew that he had an all-white jury.
He had an all-white jury.
All-white.
Well, St. Louis County, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. They weren't the jury of his peers.
Mm. So, nah. Well, and also, it's not so much that it was St. Louis County, because I tried a lot of cases out in St. Louis County. Back in 1982, Buzz Westfall was in charge of the St. Louis County juries. And for the listeners out there, Buzz Westfall was being sued, and his office was being sued and challenged, mm-hmm, because Buzz Westfall had a policy in his office at that time that every prosecutor that he hired, he told them all, they were instructed to strike every black person off of the jury. Mm-hmm. And also, there was a law called the Batson Law.
Yeah,
and
right.
The Batson Law says that you can't strike people simply because they were black. But
and Buzz that happened in my case.
And so what I'm saying is there were black people to be had on your jury, but Buzz Westfall had a policy, and may he rot in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz Westfall had a policy that he told his prosecutors, you strike every black person off the jury. So you didn't end up with a white jury because there were no black folks out there.
Exactly.
You ended up with one because it was the policy and the practice of the prosecuting attorney's office to strike black people against the law, because you can't do that because they're black.
It was a modern day lynching.
Mm, absolutely.
And another thing, they kept the family, his family support were kept out of the courtroom.
And the impact, what do you think the impact of not having his family in there in the jury room on the jury?
To me, it's just, I couldn't get that one. You
it
know,
was an advantage for the, you know, the prosecutor and the, you know, the victim and the judges, and, you know, and it was a disadvantage for me.
Because it says nobody care about this
right,
man.
Exactly.
And his family know he's guilty, too.
Right. I was going to say that they know he's guilty, so that's why they're not here supporting him.
Right.
Yeah, I was just seeking justice.
Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing, and this is back in 1982, so we're talking 82, 92, to almost over 20-something years ago. One of the things that pieces of identification that they used for you too was a Negroid hair. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, they say they found a Negroid head hair in the victim's bed sheet, you know. And for as me being African American, you know, there's millions, maybe hundred thousands of, you know, African Americans out there.
Could have been in her.
And it.
But the other piece of it is that from a, I remember when I first started practicing law, we had a seminar, and they were talking about pieces of identification for people and how you identify people. And I remember being the lone little black person standing up saying, "What do you mean you can identify me based upon my Negroid hair?
Right.
Everybody in my family has a different type of hair. What is Negroid hair?"
Yeah.
And scientifically, there is no such thing.
No such thing.
you can't, it's not like DNA.
Right.
You know, you can't take a hair from my head and a hair from your head and lay it down on a microscope and say, this is Liz's hair, you know, and this is Ruth's hair. You know, this is Barbara's hair. You can't do that. But that's not the story that was told to the jury.
Right.
Exactly.
The jury was told that this was like DNA.
Right.
Yeah. That's how they used that.
But how did your attorney, I'm sitting here, I can argue against that convincingly to a jury that this is ridiculous. You can't identify him from one piece of hair like this. How did your lawyer argue this?
No objection whatsoever.
Oh, come on.
You know, she just let David LaRue just walk over her.
Mm. You know. So and let's get back to your lawyer. Who was your lawyer again?
Stormy White.
And you know Stormy White from representing other people, don't you?
Afterwards, right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And what is the common thing with people that were represented by Stormy?
They wanted to see represented Reasonova and Tony. Reasonova had the death sentence and Tony had, you know, 2-3 lives.
For crimes they did not commit.
Did not commit. And then here comes Johnny Briscoe.
Let me talk to your sister again, because you were told to sit out in the hallway, right?
Yeah, they were going to use about 9 or 10 of us, family members, you know, as character witnesses or to, you know, just witnesses seeing where he was that night. And Stormy White kept us out of the courtroom, so Johnny had no family support in the courtroom at all.
And all of you couldn't testify to where he was that night because all of you didn't know.
Right, and we didn't know because, you know, we've never been through this before, you know, and we kind of trusted her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she only used three of the family members, and the rest, we never got to sit in the courtroom to find out what was going on. They never called us to let us know that the trial had started until after the lady that was raped had her say. We only came in, we only knew about the trial when it was time for them to do their thing with Johnny.
You didn't know that the trial date?
No.
You didn't?
No, they informed nobody of when this woman got on the stand and when she had her day in court. We only found out about it when it was Johnny's turn.
Wow.
So how long, you're in trial. Tell us about the trial, testifying in the courtroom.
Well, the victim, you know, she come in the courtroom and, you know, and prosecutor asked her, do she see the guy in the courtroom today that had, you know, actually raped her? And she said, yes, that's him sitting over there with the black suit on.
And she was sure about it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kept questioning about, you know, the night, what went on, you know. And
did she cry?
She sobbed a little bit,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
To help persuade the jury, you know, mm-hmm. Dissuade the jury. Take
well, I mean, is there a question of whether or not she was raped or not? Is there any question about whether or not she was raped?
You know what? That's a good question, except that we know that there were other rapes in that complex, and the alleged rapist who ultimately is guilty for the rape that Johnny took the fall for had raped a couple of other women in that complex. So it is a question. I'm not sure if there was DNA ever found, but certainly the DNA on the cigarette butts and the person who was there had time to smoke 3 cigarettes. So this is somebody who's looking at her accuser over a period of time, and it seems like to me would be able to identify somebody far better than what she did, even if he did have an orange jumpsuit. I mean, this is not a thing where the person hit and ran. Or it was night. They sat and talked. She gave him her phone number. So, you know, there's a lot of questions about whether or not, in fact, there wasn't a rape.
Well, we're going to take a break. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. We'll be back. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else? Indeed, washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, every single thing that you need to make your house a home. You need a leaf mulcher? You need a lawnmower? Of course you do. You're going to go on down to Sears and get one right there at Union and Natural Bridge. That's right, black-owned, black-operated. When you buy your refrigerator, you need to get down to Sears at 3425 Union, 3425 Union, and you tell them that Liz Brown told you to.
If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs, Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in every Friday at 5:15 for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to, and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage from your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons at 5:15 on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Justice for Reggie Thursday. And before we get back to our story and our conversation with Johnny Briscoe, I want to thank our sponsors for the Justice for Reggie Thursday. I want to thank Church of God in Christ and Bishop Ward for their generosity. We need support to keep this on the air, and it is wonderful when we have supporters like Bishop Ward to help keep the show on the air. So I want to thank them very much and give a shout out and appreciation to one of our sponsors for Justice for Reggie Thursday. I am here with Jamala Rogers, and we're talking with Johnny Briscoe. And Johnny, we have about 10 minutes or so left to finish telling your story. So we get to the trial. You have an all-white jury, intentionally. You're identified by the victim on the stand. The case, and your family is kept outside. The jury doesn't know that your family is here to support you. The jury doesn't know everything that they should know about your case. So what happened with the verdict?
Well, the verdict was shocking, you know, because I didn't believe that with the evidence that they had that they would convict me, because they didn't have no actual evidence that linked me.
And right. and the only thing that the jury heard was your family saying he was at home with us, mm-hmm. and then this so-called evidence of this Negroid hair and this identification of the only black guy in an orange jumpsuit in a lineup. What kind of sentence did you get?
I think I received 145 years altogether.
Did you pass out? What was that like to hear a sentence like that? Had your attorney prepared you for the amount of time that they were going to give you?
No, she did not. It was just a rush to, you know, the trial.
And so when the judge said the amount of time, what did you think?
I'm a dead man.
And I
can't do all that.
I passed out in the courtroom. I couldn't. When he started telling you got this amount on this count, this amount on that count, I counted 100 or something. I'm like, are they actually going to give him 100 and something years? I couldn't believe it. I was devastated. I couldn't believe it. You're going to convict this man on one so-called eyewitness, one person who said this. No real evidence.
No forensic evidence.
No forensic evidence.
No solid evidence.
I was about to pass out 100 and something years.
So they took you to, they gave you the sentence, they took you away. You thought, I'm going to die in jail.
Exactly. That's where I thought that was my destination. You know, I reached my final end, you know.
So what happened to change that? Did you think you were going to win on appeal after that? And then after you lost on appeal, you thought, it's done.
Yeah, that was my next options, all the appeal processes, mm-hmm. you know. And
Stormy White was the attorney that did the appeal.
Yeah, okay. Direct appeal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the person that lost the case for you the first time is the person that was doing the appeal for you.
Right.
Okay.
You know, that was a double whammy.
There you go.
You know.
There you go.
And he appealed and appealed, and he had reached his end. In fact, in this September 2006, he was supposed to go up before the parole board for what, how many times? About the 10th time or something. And, you know, he always told us, they just want me to say I'm sorry and, you know, and maybe they'll let me out, you know. But they want
my last option.
But every time that you went up to the two, you said, I didn't do this.
Right.
I didn't do this.
Exactly.
So tell us about how did you come to get out? Why are you sitting here in the studio right here today?
Well, luckily, you know, over a period of time, St. Louis County stumbled up on 3 cigarette butts, you know. Out of 9 pieces of evidence, you know, last 20-something years, they've been saying that they can't find nothing.
Because on the cigarette butts was the DNA that they needed to compare to you, because a guy smokes cigarettes.
And that's what's got me here today.
Okay, so how did that, Jamala, do you know how that happened?
Well, I know one of the things, Centauri Ministry, and we've talked about Jim McCloskey's group before,
My man, Jim.
Yeah, so a number of prisoners who believe they're innocent try to appeal to Centurion Ministry, and they could only take so many cases, and they were definitely interested in this case as well as Steve Tony's. But, you know, over a period of time, they motioned to get the evidence, couldn't get it, couldn't find it, and I believe just when it looked the darkest that they couldn't find it. And here's why it's so important for us to talk about injustice, to be there, because during the DNA case, the hearing that Representative Connie Johnson had, there were a couple of us who testified, myself included, who raised the issue of what happened with Steve Tony and Johnny Briscoe. And two of the employees from the lab where the so-called DNA evidence was lost was there in the room, and they heard that their company was the one who had the custody of this evidence.
Been there all the time.
And they went back and found it.
Because you were first told that, we could do the DNA test, but we have to have the cigarette butts. We can't find the cigarette butts. The cigarette butts are gone. Mm-hmm. So then your heart must have just, like, this was my salvation, and they can't find him. And then it's only by an act of God that they stumbled upon the cigarette butts.
Yeah.
And what was interesting to me is what they found on the cigarette butts. Did they find female DNA on the cigarette butts?
Exactly.
What does that mean?
She smoked with him.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, well, don't get me started on this one, but clearly... Clearly, there was some complicity. I mean, you would not be smoking a cigarette behind your so-called rapist. I don't think you would as a female. I certainly wouldn't be.
But nevertheless, the DNA that they found on the cigarette butt didn't match your DNA.
It would have exonerated me.
Okay, so how long did it take you after that came out to walk out of jail?
3 days.
3 days. And did they find the person, did they find a match of DNA on the cigarette butts?
Oh, yeah, they found a match, and I'm familiar with the guy that did that.
You knew him?
I knew him.
Grew up with him.
I mean, his brother was associate.
Well, of course he would have to know you because he used your name.
Exactly.
He told the rape victim that his name was Johnny Briscoe.
Yeah, John Briscoe.
John Briscoe.
Yeah.
She didn't say...
When they got... ID on a Johnny Briscoe, then it changed from John to Johnny.
Mm. So he never said Johnny Briscoe.
No.
He said John Briscoe.
Mm-hmm. And, you know.
And have you ever been called? Has he ever been called John Briscoe?
No, John was reserved for my father. My father was always John Briscoe. Nobody ever referred to Johnny as John. Never.
And I guess if you're going to tell a rape victim your name, you're going to tell him your name.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Social Security number, address, phone number, all that.
Might as well.
You know, yeah. If you're actually the guy that, you know, that's doing that.
Now, was the person that actually raped her, or whose DNA matched the DNA on the cigarette, but was he incarcerated at the time?
Yes. Was he incarcerated?
He was incarcerated when you got out because he eventually got convicted on some other rape charges.
Yeah, later. Yeah, he was still out there.
Okay.
Yeah,
so he was out there. How long were you in jail? How many years did you serve?
24
years. As family members, did you ever think that he was going to get out?
Yes, I knew he didn't do it. In fact, we all knew that was not Johnny. My mother, we come from a praying family, mm-hmm. and my mother would always write him, and she would say, I hope they would open these letters and read them before they give them to Johnny, so they'll know that I'm praying, and I know my boy will be home one day. They can't keep him forever. He's mm-hmm. coming home. Mm-hmm. Stay prayerful, Johnny. Stay prayerful, and I hope that they're reading this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we come from a real religious family, and we're a praying people.
So you knew he was coming
home? Yeah.
Huh?
We knew God was in control of that. It was his plan for him to come home.
Johnny, did you think you were ever coming home?
Well, deep in my mind, I did, but through the legal processes, I was a dead man.
Yeah, because he was exhausted. He was telling us, this time, when I go up for parole, I'm just going to say, yeah, I did it just so I can get out of here.
Yeah, I was going to step over my morals and principles just to bow down and just to get some freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I guess it wasn't in the script for me to do that.
No.
So you served how many years for a crime you didn't do? 21?
24.
24 years.
Almost 25.
Almost 25. And have you been able to, have they compensated you at all for this, Johnny?
No, they haven't.
Has anybody apologized to you for this?
No, they haven't. Bob McCullough, he apologized.
Bob McCullough,
St. Louis County prosecutor, he apologized.
And I don't know what was it about this case, but almost immediately when they found the DNA, Bob McCullough immediately drove himself to the prison to get Johnny. And so, but to me, you know, to me, 25 years, you coming to the prison is not enough.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you need to totally revamp your system. You need to say there's something wrong with the way that we meet our justice here in the county, because there's Johnny Briscoe is only one of many cases. It's so arbitrary that his case came to light, and there's many more, but here is one of the many examples of why we do Reggie Thursday.
Mm. Well, I want to thank you all so much for taking the time this morning and sharing this story with us. I really appreciate it. And it was nice meeting all of you.
Thank you.
And if people really want to get to some of the nitty-gritty of the story, they can go to Centuria Ministries website. And there's a whole case thing on Johnny's case, and you can kind of get into the meat of it and see all of the inconsistencies and injustices of that case.
Very good. Jamala, thank you so much for
thank
joining
you,
me.
Liz. Thank you,
and I will be back in the next hour. Stay with me.
People who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that. Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you stand?
The hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 9 minutes after the hour, or 9 minutes, 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. We are experiencing some audio difficulties, so I'm going to bring you some of the latest national news. You can check us out at WGNU.net and click on Real Audio if you want to listen to the program at this hour. In the news in your 9 o'clock hour, here's the latest on the stories making the news. A volatile church group won't be protesting today at the funerals of the victims of the Amish school shooting. Political future speaker of the House, Dennett Hastert, remains cloudy this morning, and a UN spokeswoman says there's been a possible threat against the European headquarters at Geneva, Switzerland. Classes are canceled for students at one Virginia County school today because of the threat, and a third original member of Charlie's Angel is now battling cancer. And it took 5 years for Austrian officials to realize that a man had died and was left in his bed. A conservative talk show host has convinced a volatile church group to stop the planned protest today at the funerals of the victims of the attack at an Amish school. Mike Gallagher said the Westboro Baptist Church of Kansas has agreed to call off its protest in exchange for 1 hour of airtime on his show this morning. Yesterday, Pennsylvania State Police announced they had located the two gunmen's relatives, Charles Roberts, claimed he molested 20 years ago. Both women, who were 3 and 5 at the time, could not recall ever being assaulted. And rumors over Hastert's future continue. The political future of House Speaker Dennis Hastert remains cloudy this morning in the wake of the email scandal of former Florida Congressman Mark Foley. The members of the House Ethics Committee plan to meet in a closed-door session today to talk about the situation. Hastert, an Illinois Republican, has been under fire for his alleged failure to take action when he was confronted with evidence on Foley's inappropriate correspondence with male teenaged House pages. The speculation says Hastert could be forced out of his post after next month's elections. And the UN spokeswoman says there's been a possible threat against its European headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland. Elena Palmavera says Swiss authorities made them aware of a possible incident that could not provide any more specific information on the threat, however, or how it was made or whether it would be carried out. However, security has been beefed up around the sprawling UN Geneva complex after the warning, but officials say work is proceeding as normal inside the building. That is a look at this hour's national news. We're going to take a look at the local news scene, and I will be back with your traffic and weather.
Report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU News Update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, Congressman John Shimkus's challenger is demanding that Shimkus be fired as the chairman of the House Page Program. Democrat Danny Stover says Shimkus has refused to accept responsibility for what he calls an inadequate investigation of the allegations against former Florida Congressman Mark Foley. Foley resigned last week amid accusations that he sent sexually charged messages to former congressional pages. Shimkus says he plans to keep his post and he remains committed to the safety of the pages. The Missouri Supreme Court is expected to rule on the state's voter ID law in the next several days. A federal challenge to the law is on hold while the state high court considers the case. A Cole County judge last month threw out the requirement for voters to present a photo ID at the polls starting with the November election. The high court heard arguments on the law yesterday. Opponents say the law would harm elderly, low-income, minority, and disabled voters who won't be able to meet the ID requirement. Finally this hour, the American Podiatric Medical Association is taking steps to increase awareness about diabetes with their Knock Your Socks Off campaign. Dr. Joseph Caparuso, a member of the Board of Trustees, says this initiative asks diabetics or anyone who thinks they may be at risk to have their feet examined during a doctor's visit.
Skin discoloration may indicate a problem with the circulation caused by diabetes. Differences in temperatures where the foot may be cold and then hot, and vice versa, any kind of deformity that might be occurring. People that have ulcers on their foot or wounds on their feet that are just not healing in a time frame of 1 to 2 months may have diabetes.
20.8 million people in the U.S. suffer from diabetes, but 6.2 million are undiagnosed. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Advil. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. The every pain reliever. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Northbound 170 at Forest Park Parkway and Page slow due to road construction. There are a number of road construction areas going on there, so just use caution and slow down through the work zones. Those are in the St. Louis metropolitan area, St. Charles County, St. Louis County, and the Metro East. Other than that, northbound Jefferson at Cass, look for an injury accident. Clayton at South Euclid, there's a fuel spill that has been reported. And North Taylor at Martin Luther King Drive, look for an injury accident. Also, all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect some delays at this hour due to the last-minute morning rush. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. McDonald's is celebrating the Cards postseason by bringing back Big Mac sandwiches for a dollar every day the Cardinals play. Limit two per customer. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Much cooler, mostly cloudy this morning and afternoon, becoming partly sunny later today with a high in the mid-60s. This evening, cooler, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. Friday, mostly sunny with a high around 70. And Saturday, mostly sunny, warmer with a high near 80. Currently, we have 59 degrees and clouds. Lambert Field is reporting 59 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below, that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, and I'm telling you, the issue that is going to determine a lot of things. I really think that we just are in a period of revelation. I think there's so many stories coming down to tell us about who we are and where we are. And specifically, I am talking about the case of Mark Foley. And I have with me in the studio the National Director of SNAP, David Clousey. David, welcome.
Thank you, Liz. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. And David, tell us about your organization, because I want to tie people into your organization and how it this must seem like a very familiar story to you.
Painfully familiar. Yes, we're a support group, a nationwide support group for men and women who are sexually abused by clergy.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the word priest in our title, we're open to anybody who was hurt by a religious authority figure from any denomination. So mostly what we try to do is to provide, you know, comfort and solace and sympathy for people who've been wounded by
mm-hmm.
clergy people, whether as kids or as adults, and help them recover from the trauma. But increasingly we also do public education, because we find that it helps each one of us heal
mm-hmm.
when we help expose not just the molesters themselves, but those people in authority who cover for and shield and transfer and defend the molesters.
And I want to take a moment, Howard, if we could, I'd like to get to some of the comments from the attorney in this case, because this case of Mark Foley really seems to encompass so many issues about people preying upon children.
Absolutely, absolutely. You see the perpetrator
mm-hmm.
minimizing it.
Mm-hmm.
You see his friends saying, "We didn't know." You see his colleagues saying, "Well, you know, I told so and so who should have told so and so." You know, it's just a constellation of bad behaviors, and unfortunately, it looks like the Republican leadership, none of them are even are not appropriately repentant about the mistakes that they've made in this case. I mean, but the bottom line is, you know, much like in the Catholic Church scandal.
Because that's what I was going to ask you. Do you see some similarities between what has happened in the Catholic Church and their dealing with priests that have had the same accusations mm-hmm. and have done the same things, and what is happening with Mark Foley? Because Mark Foley's not denying that he did these things.
Right. Very much of the same parallels, Liz, all across the board. Let's start at the very top. In the Catholic Church, one of the real problems is the bishops insisted that they handle sexual abuse claims in-house.
Mm.
And that's essentially what happens with the PAGE program.
Mm-hmm.
There's a panel of three people who oversee the program. Guess who they are? They're congresspeople.
There you go.
You see the same parallel where bishops kept saying this was an isolated incident, and that's what we're hearing, you know. You also hear church officials essentially saying, well, the parents of the child wanted us to keep this quiet. And that's what Republican politicians in Washington are saying. So many, many of the same, unfortunately, destructive behaviors.
And we're going to take a break. We'll be back to continue this discussion. I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to David Clousey, the National Director of SNAP. Stay with us.
Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Hello, St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. We're talking about Mark Foley. We're talking about the ramifications, the implications, and what this says about the Republican Party, what this says about politics, what this says about our nation and their willingness to address the issue head-on of molestation, of predatory, of pedophile type of behavior. And I'm here this morning in the studio with me is David Clousey. He's the National Director of SNAP. And David, I had mentioned that there were some comments made by the attorney of Mark Foley, and I want you to take a listen to those comments, and we'll talk about him afterwards. And Howard, can you just go ahead and play all four of them straight on? Thanks. We have six? Okay.
Mark voluntarily entered a substance abuse and mental health facility on Sunday at approximately midnight Eastern Time. I was there, and he will be there for at least 30 days. Mark explicitly reaffirms his acceptance of responsibility and remorse. He reiterates unequivocally that he has never had sexual contact with a minor. This decision was Mark's, as was his decision to resign from the United States House of Representatives. This was a life decision, not a tactical one made by others. Specifically, Mark is asked that you be told that between the ages of 13 and 15, he was molested by a clergyman. He very much wanted to release the name of the individual, the church affiliation, and other details, but was advised by civil counsel to delay that decision pending his completion of treatment after Mark has had an opportunity to consult with counsel. Finally, Mark Foley wants you to know that he is a gay man.
Now, David, listening to all of that, what are your thoughts in terms of I don't know, the veracity of it, if you can comment on that, and just the saying of these particular words? What does it mean to you?
I'd love to believe that the lawyer is telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the timing is horribly suspect.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I do think a couple things. I do think that we really have to work hard as a society to make it easier, not harder, for people to come out and say that they're gay, for people to come out and say they're alcoholic, for people to come out and say they have mental problems, and for people to come out and say they were molested. So it's tough. You know, on the one hand, you know, my immediate reaction is, boy, it sounds like excuse making. On the other hand, I think of a 14-year-old girl who's being molested by her coach. And she's sitting down at the dinner table, and she hears her dad watching the news, and he says, oh, that's a bunch of bunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that 14-year-old girl thinks back to what her predator keeps telling her. If you speak up,
nobody will believe you.
Mm-hmm. So it's tough. I do think, though, more than anything else, here's a guy who's a lawmaker, a prominent person. I think he has the same civic and moral obligation that all of us do, but he has a tremendous opportunity that very few of us do. He has an obligation,
mm-hmm.
if he was molested by somebody, to report it to the police.
Mm-hmm.
If his civil counsel says don't disclose the name publicly, you know, that's a secondary concern. The
mm-hmm.
main thing is, you know, if somebody's doing wrong, you call 911,
mm-hmm.
period. No matter how long ago it happened, by the way, no matter, you know, if the predator might be 99 years old in a nursing home, it doesn't matter. If it's criminal behavior, you call 911. And unfortunately, that's clearly what Foley has not done. if indeed he was molested.
Mm-hmm.
And that's clearly not what his Republican colleagues in the House did when they suspected wrongdoing on his part.
And you raise a really, really powerful point about some child sitting there listening to adults comment on the veracity of Mark Foley in telling this right now. And you really, that's a very powerful point about, you know, nobody's going to believe me.
Yeah.
Nobody, and the damage that is, the damage that comes out of this, as awful as it is, it's a wonderful opportunity to get to these, get to exposing these people.
Exactly. I mean, I would hope, you know, that one of the silver linings that could come out of this is, I would hope around the country there are parents saying to their kids, look, if somebody touches you,
mm-hmm.
clergyman, relative, whoever, don't do what this congressman says he did.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sit on it for years. Don't protect the predator. You know, call the police right away.
And then the other piece of this are the parents saying that they don't want to go any further with this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that? To the parent that says, I am protecting my child by not going after this predator.
Well, I've got two boys,
mm-hmm.
and I certainly understand deeply how if your child was hurt, you know, job one of a parent is to prevent their
mm-hmm.
child from being hurt,
mm-hmm.
and job two of a parent is to stop the pain as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that deeply, but I also understand, and I think all of us do, that these men who prey on kids, they simply do not stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so as painful as it is, I think we teach our kids an extraordinarily valuable lesson if we say to them, your pain matters. I care about you. I don't want you to hurt anymore. But at the same time, you know, we live in a society. We have an obligation to others.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to at least report him to the police.
And isn't the lesson in that also that doesn't a child get out of that? Isn't that like the ultimate act of protection for your child, for real? Because they get to see their parent actually
yes.
Saying, this is not shameful. This is not about, this is not, you have done something wrong. We're going to get the person that has done something wrong.
That's exactly right, Liz. That's exactly right. All too often, I think, parents, it's their own fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's their own shame
mm-hmm.
that prevents them from calling the police to report their child's victimization.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
again, job one of a parent is to keep your child safe. If you let your child go on camping trips or go to the movies with somebody who turns out to be a child molester, of course you're going to be deeply embarrassed
mm-hmm.
and you're going to be just devastated by that. But you, as a parent, have to show your child
mm-hmm.
that you can't stay trapped in your own shame.
Mm-hmm. And fear.
And fear,
mm-hmm.
that's right. And you have to take action to protect others, no matter how frightening and overwhelming that might be.
And in terms of what is being discussed about this Mark Foley case, do you see any other types of missed opportunities in the discussion of this?
Well, I do. The one, you know, there are some vague reforms being talked about with respect to the Congressional Page Program.
One of the things they're talking about is ending the program in its entirety.
Right. But one thing seems crystal clear to me that few people are talking about, you know, I don't want to get ridiculously patriotic here, but we're a country,
mm-hmm.
a separate country, because England was a monarchy with absolutely no checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up this form of government so that there would be checks and balances. But look at the Page Program, who oversees it, you
mm-hmm.
know, three congressmen. I mean, I would hope that any institution out there that has any kind of an internal committee to deal with sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, we'll take a good hard look at the composition of that committee and say, gee, do we have a law enforcement person on here? Do we have a former prosecutor on here? Do we have a mental health person on here? And does this internal committee understand that their job is secondary and the first job, again, is to call the police?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we just constantly have to remind ourselves. The temptation is to never air your dirty linen in public. The
mm-hmm.
temptation is to go to one another, as Congressman Shimkus did,
mm-hmm.
talking directly, allegedly, to Congressman Foley, instead of going to the right sources.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a huge opportunity for us all to realize that we, you know, these are criminal matters or potentially criminal matters, and they have to be dealt with by the independent professionals in law enforcement.
Does the fact that this is political it has occurred in a political arena, it's occurred at a hugely political time, we're just a few days out from the November election, and the fate of the Republican majority swings in the balance of this election day. Do you think that the politics of this will prevent us from being able to have the real discussions that we need to have about this? Are you fearful of that?
I am fearful of that. How do you defend the indefensible? Mm-hmm. Well, you do it by attacking the motives of the people who are bringing the issue up.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it in the Catholic Church context. Mm-hmm. We saw bishops saying, these are anti-Catholic people who want to hurt our church. And we see Republicans saying, these are Democrats that want to hurt our chances to...
Or the media.
Right, exactly. But, I guess I keep coming back to, number one, nobody really fully ever understands someone else's motives.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they're partisan or whether they're negative or destructive or selfish, whatever the motives might be that help bring this to the surface, I would argue they're, if not irrelevant, at least secondary.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, again, here you've got a powerful guy who, obviously engaged in inappropriate behavior, maybe illegal behavior. Let's focus on that and not the motives of people. Right? Again, if I see somebody running out of a bank with a stocking cap over his hand and a gun in one hand and a bag of money in the other, I might call the police, because I don't like the way he looks.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I might be racist.
Mm-hmm.
I might be whatever. I might be mad because he ran out in front of my car and I almost hit him.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. The fact is he was committing a crime, and regardless of my motivations, the right thing to do is to solve the crime and to try to prevent it from happening again. And so I would hope that everybody would say, well, sure, maybe there is some partisanship here. Sure, maybe there is some scandal mongering here. Sure, maybe there's a desire to sell more newspapers here. Sure, but that's secondary. What matters is the wrongdoing, investigating it, and trying to make sure it doesn't happen again.
A number of people have called the show in an attempt to just get at that, the focus on the motivation of the story being here at this point as opposed to what happened to a child. And in that discussion, they have said a couple of things. They've said, one, it's not a pedophile, because this is a 16-year-old, and you have to be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in order for this to be a pedophile type of action. And secondly, 16 is the age of consent in Washington, D.C., so why are we even talking about this? This is, this is simply a gay guy wanting to get with another gay guy. How do you respond to that?
That is just ridiculous hair splitting.
Mm-hmm.
Take gender out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If a 52-year-old man was coming on to a 16-year-old girl,
wanting to take her to the prom.
Exactly. People would say that's just wrong.
And it's creepy, and it's pedophile.
That's right. And I don't care what word you use. You can call it pedophilia. You can call it a sickness. You can call it whatever. The bottom line is it's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And if indeed, all of the pages that he ever did or said anything inappropriate to, if every single one of them was technically, legally over the age of consent, we all know in our heart of hearts it's creepy and it's wrong. And bottom line, it's hurtful to those teenagers. It's confusing to those teenagers. These are kids, we don't let them drink. Mm-hmm. We don't let them
vote. Some states don't let them drive.
Yeah, so it's, you can split hairs all day long. And I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not going to say I definitively know the exact precise moment when a pedophile becomes an ephebophile, who's technically, kids over adolescent. I mean, there is no precise moment because adolescence varies from kid to kid. But again, the bottom line is that we all know that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it was handled is wrong. And I hope we focus a lot on that, too, as a society. Not just what Foley did, but what the Republican leadership has done.
And is doing.
He's doing now, yeah.
We're going to take a break. I'm talking to David Clousey. He's the National Director of SNAP. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with us. Visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else indeed are you going to get washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, every single thing that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace, to do wonderful things? How about a leaf mulcher? How about a lawnmower? How about a tractor? You know what? Get on down to Sears at 3425 Union 3rd. Sears, 3425 Union, right there at the corner of Union and Natural Bridge. Get your shop on and tell them I told you to.
This is Mark Hinderleiter, host of Lessons in Leadership. Every Friday afternoon, I interview high-level leaders about leadership issues that matter most. As far as I know, it's the only show of its kind. Whether you're an executive, manager, teacher, coach, volunteer leader, or the head of a family, this show is for you. You'll get practical tips from real leaders on topics that can give you the competitive edge in the marketplace. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to Lessons in Leadership.
ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I'm having a conversation this morning with the National Director of SNAP, David Clousey, and we're talking about Mark Foley and all of the ramifications of that and all of the discussion points out of that. And David, I want you to take a listen to this legislator talking about his response to the Mark Foley story. Go ahead, Howard.
I don't think it's appropriate for this to become a political football to be used in this election season. This is about the bad conduct of an individual and something we need to go back and try to prevent from happening in the future.
So this isn't about politics, it's about the bad behavior of an individual. Can we take the politics out of this discussion, David?
Probably not. But I think what really struck me about that congressman's...
That was Frist.
Okay, well, what really struck me about that comment was the damage control. This is about one individual's bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's not.
And you're in PR.
You're in PR.
You understand the language that is being used and the reason why specific words are chosen to be said.
Yeah, exactly. He's saying it's not about the Republican leadership. It's not about Congress as a whole. It's not about politics. It's about Mark Foley. And, I wish that were true. You know, but very clearly, other people in Congress, maybe Democrats too, I don't know, but other people in Congress absolutely had clear warning signs and either chose to ignore them, number one, or number two, chose to report them to the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, it was the wrong place that also it was wrong because it wouldn't surface publicly.
And the other piece of it is that it is about an institution because the institution... Like all institutions, when members of a particular institution do something that is wrong, the institution is supposed to attempt to make things right.
Yes.
And the institution has a responsibility to this institution, being the Congress of the United States. They have an ethics committee. They have an opportunity to make it clear that they don't stand with wrong, that they don't tolerate wrong, and that they are doing things to make certain the wrong doesn't occur again. Because it isn't, you can't be a congressman without being part of the institution.
Exactly.
So, you know, you can't just stand up in the middle of the street and say, I'm a congressman. No, in order to do that, you have to be part of an institution. So you can't split the baby from
That's
this,
right.
you know.
That's exactly right. I mean, when it's convenient to be part of Congress, they proudly proclaim themselves mm-hmm. to be part of Congress.
And a
Congress,
wonderful institution and all of that.
That's right. When it's inconvenient, then they say, well, this is about one individual's bad behavior. I mean, I do appreciate the fact that he talks about prevention. Prevention is key. And, mm-hmm. and I have to believe that there will be, you know, some reforms, if not the abolition of the paid system, as a result of this. But we can't jump from A to Z, you know, in between apologizing for one person's bad behavior and preventing in the future. In between, there's got to be an investigation about what really did go on, and amends have to be made right now. I mean, to the pages who, you know, who were hurt and scared and confused and creeped out
mm-hmm.
by Foley, and to their families, and apparently to some congressional aides who felt very conflicted, who, you know, this fellow Fordyce, who said, I reported it, I did what I could, and
that was that.
That was that. Yeah.
I had a guest on yesterday, Robert Perry, an editor of Consortium News, and he wrote an article about why some of the pages were hesitant to say anything about it. And he talked about it from the perspective of fear of not having a political future.
Mm-hmm.
If they say something about knowing what Mark Foley is out here doing, how do you speak to that?
Oh, I think we can't overemphasize all of the factors that keep somebody who is sexually harassed or sexually exploited or sexually abused that help keep them silent. Mm-hmm. There's the internal shame. There's the shame that's oftentimes heaped upon them by the predator. There's the confusion. There's career, you know, mm-hmm. fear about career ramifications. I mean, that's what makes predators so effective. They mm-hmm. they know all the buttons to push, all the fears to prey upon. And so for somebody to imply, and I've heard people do this, well, come on, these kids are 15, they're 16, they're old enough to know better. Well, two things. Number one, that is not necessarily true. They may not know better. And mm-hmm. secondly, even if they know better, they don't know how to respond. I mean, think about the first time you were in a car accident at age 16. Well, what did you do? I remember thinking, well, do I pull off the road?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I supposed to leave everything just the way it is?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go check on this other person first? Or what do I do? I didn't know. First time for me. And surely, some of these kids, the very first time a grown-up ever sort of sexually propositioned them or said inappropriate things, might well have been in emails and IMs from Mark Foley. These kids must have been scared to death and confused as could be.
And the other piece of it is that when you hear an adult say that a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 21-year-old supposed to know about these things, where does knowledge come from? I mean, knowledge comes from either experience or conversations or from a structured environment of being taught that. How many parents have sat their child down and had a conversation about this is what you do when an adult does this to you, particularly mm-hmm. at the age of 16. Now, you may have had that conversation when they're 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't let an adult touch you in any. But 16, what conversation are you having about with your child about a 54-year-old man approaching you?
That's right. And we have to, we do as a society, I think, a better job with very young kids
mm-hmm.
than we do with teenagers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're nervous talking about.
We don't like to talk to teenagers about sex, you know, with each other.
Right.
You know,
teenagers sure don't want to talk to us. Period.
Right.
Yeah, but it's important to. I think you alluded to this. This kind of predatory behavior, it's not crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody breaks a car window and takes your purse,
mm-hmm.
you know a crime's
exactly.
been committed. When
exactly.
When these predators, they're very slow, they're very cunning, they're very gradual, and they'll start by complimenting a child or
mm-hmm.
a teenager on his or her looks.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll buy him or her a shirt and
mm-hmm.
say, well, why don't you try it on now? You know, I'll turn my head. And they gradually, gradually cross over these
mm-hmm.
boundaries, and they hug a child, and maybe a little bit too long.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a clear, bright line where a light bulb goes off in a teenager's head that says, this is undeniably predatory behavior and must be reported to the police. It simply, it doesn't happen.
But isn't there also that whole part of there may not even be an understanding that something inappropriate was done to them to days later, months later, years later,
yes.
because of whatever happened psychologically with that particular individual, you didn't know. I mean, I could even say from a race perspective, there were some things that were done to me as a child that were racist that I didn't realize until I had my adult experience to go back and to do the 1+1+2 of that. So, you know, you may not understand that until you're 40.
That's exactly right. And there's a second part to that. Not only do you have to then understand in retrospect that what happened to you was wrong, but the single greatest coping mechanism we've learned in SNAP for child abuse victims is to minimize it. It's to say, as an adult, oh, yeah, that priest, he put his hands in my pants a couple times, but it never went any further.
Mm-hmm.
Or that seminarian, you know, he tried something with me once, but I fought it off.
Mm-hmm.
And so what a child, what an abuse victim does is define a horrific crime as kind of this isolated incident like childhood measles.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible at the time, but now I'm okay. So only it usually takes years, if not decades, of self-destructive behavior as an adult before you begin to realize that that incident as a child has long-term ramifications and affects your life every single day. You know, it's the fourth bar fight. It's the fifth divorce.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sixth time you get fired for yelling to your boss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you do, like you said, you do the math, you connect the dots, and you think, well, maybe I'm not just choosing the wrong partners. Maybe I'm not just having this run of bad luck with these short-tempered bosses. Maybe there's something about me. And then you get into therapy, or again, you simply connect the dots on your own, and you begin to realize, hey, that abuse as a child still impacts me today.
And so when people say that, because this just kills me, when anybody says that a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, 17-year-old should know better, knowledge comes from conversations, experience, or structural things that give you the knowledge of it. And what has happened structurally or within your family that you have educated and content, because even one lesson doesn't... I don't learn always from one lesson, you know?
Absolutely not. What I try to do with people who have those sentiments or express those sentiments is I say, imagine this. Imagine that your 70-year-old parents, you know, are in a terrible car crash, and your mom dies, or your dad dies, and your mom is devastated. And she goes to a therapist, 40-year-old therapist, 70-year-old woman. They end up having sex. How are you going to feel? Are you going to blame your mom? Of course not. You're going to say, my God, that powerful, influential therapist exploited my mom's trauma and suffering to get sex.
And she was 70 years old.
And she was 70 years old. She should have known better, for goodness sakes. Well, if that's wrong, then surely it's wrong for a 52-year-old powerful politician to prey upon sexually somebody who's 16, 17, 18, 19. The disparity, what matters is not the chronological age. What matters is the disparity of power.
And that's, and getting back to the Mark Foley piece, we're talking about rock star almost disparity of power between a sitting congressman and a 16-year-old person living in a dorm up in the seat of power in Washington D.C.
Right, maybe hundreds and hundreds of miles away from his or her parents, maybe
for the first time,
never having had a serious conversation since age 6 or 7 about predatory sexual behavior. The disparity of power, I think, cannot be overstated. These teenagers, you know, they may have, the boys may have facial hair, the girls may be developing physically, but they are children in every real sense of the word.
And the one thing that they do understand without question is who has power and who does not.
That's right.
I mean, that has been taught their whole life in terms of authority figures, and because people, I'm certainly made a huge deal out of the fact that they got the gig. They got to go up to Washington, D.C. So it is clear who has the power and how lucky they are to have this position. And one of the things I was reading about this, David, to get to that also, is most congresspeople really don't have a whole lot to say to these kids.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so for this man to take the time out, you have that factor too, that specialness factor.
Mm-hmm. Right, which he clearly, you know, exploited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
And we see that with priests, too. Don't they, like, pick a special one or make them feel that they're the special one?
Absolutely. And bestow, you know, tremendous attention and affection and sometimes gifts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to make parents feel fearful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if there's some other adult who is lavishing your child, you know, with expensive presents and wanting to take your child to Europe or on a, you know, down to the Lake of the Ozarks for a week, you know, you can be flattered by that, but I would beg parents to be, you know, at least a little skeptical and to please talk to your child in advance, you know, about a safety plan, you know.
And the other piece of it is that, so if you don't let them go, what's the harm that's going to happen out of that? I mean, which side do you err on?
Well, I think, I hate to say it, but I think these days you simply have to, you know, err on the side of caution. When my boys, now that one is 13, one is 10, and we've let them go on just a couple of overnight trips.
Mm-hmm.
But early on, when they're, you know, when their 7-year-old friends and 8-year-old friends were doing overnights, and we told them no, we mm-hmm. would go out of our way that weekend mm-hmm. to do something very special and make it clear to them, you know, we're taking you, you know, to this matinee, or we're taking you here because, you know, we know that we've asked you to forego this fun opportunity, but mm-hmm. we'd rather take you someplace safe ourselves mm-hmm. and try to have as much fun.
Mm-hmm. Very good advice. Listen, this is Liz Brown. I'm having a conversation with the National Director of SNAP, David Clousey. I'm Liz Brown. We'll be back with more of our conversation. Stay with us.
This is Danny Glover, and you're listening to The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension. These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Oss, Treasurer.
This is Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU.
Scientists have discovered a way to reanimate dogs that have been dead for 3 hours. They fill you up with salt. They season you is what they do. It's a marinade, for lack of a better way to put it. So I guess realistically speaking, they could do this in China, right? So they fill the dog full of salt water. If it doesn't work out, the dog dies. Hey, you know, it's General Chow's chicken in the end. It all works out. Something about the zombie dog where you put salt water in them, kill them, and then revive them hours later, and the idea that it's intended for human trials. Who would volunteer for that?
Brett Rosen, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. on WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Fat man in front of me. He's calling black people trash to his children. And he's the only trash here I see. And I'm thinking this man wears a white hood. The night when his children should sleep, but they'll slip through their windows and they'll see him, and they'll think that white hood's all they need. It's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life, it's a hard life forever to go. And if we poison our children with hatred, in the hard life is all that they'll know.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm talking to David Clousey, the National Director of SNAP. And David, we were talking off the air, and I want to pose this question again to you. There's conversation that the entire Page intern program in Congress now, as a result of what has happened with the continuing story of Mark Foley, that the entire program should be eliminated. What's your response to that?
Well, it may come to that if the proposed reforms are, piecemeal and are public relations more than real reform, then I would advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of the program, but I think.
And getting why? Step, why would you advocate that?
Well, if the reforms aren't real,
mm-hmm.
then the abuse will happen again.
Mm.
Because if the fundamental problem is a huge imbalance of power
mm-hmm.
between the members of Congress and these young, vulnerable, far away from home teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather see no program at all than one that will continue to set up young people and teenagers to be exploited. But even before we get to that point, one thing does seem to be very clear to me. There have to be some serious consequences, not just for Foley, but the others in Congress who saw the warning signs and did nothing.
Shimkus, you were talking about what Shimkus said.
Well, Shimkus says, I'm not going to resign from the Oversight Board because I made a mistake, but I did at least confront Mark Foley. Well, I think that... he should resign, and I think that he should say, I'm resigning because I want everybody to understand that when I don't put money in the parking meter, I have a consequence. I pay the ticket. When I return a video late to Blockbuster, there's a consequence. I pay for it. And when I make a mistake that results in the sexual exploitation of teenagers, or even one teenager, that's a mistake of such a magnitude that I am going to pay a consequence. And to not do that... think about the message that sends to supervisors and camp directors and employers around the country. You've got somebody on your staff, and you have think about sexual behavior, questionable actions they're taking, and you think, well, I better do something, because otherwise I'll come under fire and my organization will come under fire. And then you think, look what happened with the Page thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single congressman.
Went to jail.
Went to jail.
Lost anything.
Down. That's right. Paid a fine. Nothing. Ha. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
And don't we have to also just really underscore the fact that he was in charge of this program? You're the top of the food chain with regard to this program. And I imagine that he's a parent, and that to me that was enough for him to just mention it and not stay on it. I mean, think of all
That's
of the
right.
things that happen in our work life that when it's important to us, we stay on it. If we think
mm-hmm.
that this is whether I should get a raise, whether I think that the color of our portfolio should be blue as opposed to chartreuse, we stay on those things to the people that we have to report to because they're important to us.
That's right. And think about the jobs that involve the physical safety of adults,
mm-hmm.
Air traffic controllers and all those kinds of things. When there's a near miss...
Mm-hmm.
Heads roll. When an adult is almost hurt
mm-hmm.
or might have been hurt,
there you go.
Somebody loses their job or someone is demoted or someone steps down.
There you
Here
go.
We're talking about actual harm to not one teenager but several teenagers.
And admitted harm.
Right.
I mean, there is no question here. Mark Foley is not saying you all are misreading my text messages. You're taking them out of context. He's saying,
That's right.
I said this. Now, the only thing he's not saying is the thing that we don't have any videotape of is I didn't have sex with these children.
Right.
And how do you draw should we draw a distinction between the conversation on the text message and the actual act of having sex with a 16-year-old?
Well, I think the law has to draw some distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
We as responsible adults don't have to be bound by the same distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
My next-door neighbor can wave a gun in my face, and that's one crime. It's very different than pulling the trigger, but still the waving of the gun is wrong and frightening and should be stopped. So, again, I'm not a prosecutor, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know whether technically Mark Foley violated the law, but all of us know that his behavior was hurtful to those kids. Those kids are going to be in therapy. Those kids are going to have some sexual issues. That, maybe there are kids who will not feel safe dating and being intimate for some mm-hmm. with somebody for 10 or 15 or 20 years, you know, you can't deny that it's hurtful behavior, whether or not it crosses the line into illegal behavior or not.
And David, that's just, that is stopping only at the life of the child. The child is within a family. Mm-hmm. There's also, this impacts on a family as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to believe that there are hundreds of mothers and fathers and siblings out there, of people who've gone through this PAGE program, who are thinking, wow, I wonder if, you know, we're going to hear mm-hmm. 10 or 20 or 30 years from now that it happened to my brother, to my sister, to my son, to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't discount that trauma and those doubts.
And the families where we know that it did happen, it's not just the abuse that is directed at the child. It's the also that it impacts a family forever, doesn't it?
Absolutely it does. You know, that's one of the tragic things in the clergy sex abuse crisis. One of the ways that bishops try to minimize it is they don't talk about the family ramifications. They don't talk about or work to heal the wounded parish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll suspend an abusive priest. They'll, you know, in many instances offer therapy to the individual child, but you rarely see a church official going out to a congregation and saying, let's have a talk about this. This is a betrayal. It's a crime against one individual, but it's a betrayal of the whole group, the whole community, and we've got to discuss this. We've got to come to grips with this. And be honest about it as a whole in order for any of us to heal and move on. I doubt that's going to happen with the Congressional PAGE program, but it certainly needs to happen because you're right. It impacts far more people than the man who sent and the teenagers who got those instant messages.
And you use the word betrayal. Is that a word that is only applicable in the context of the priest?
Oh, no. No, this is a betrayal. In Congress with Foley, it's a betrayal of the public trust. It's a betrayal of the pages and their families. You know, all the taxpayers who say, look, I expect, you know, these men and women to go up to Washington and behave honorably. And I expect them to do what any citizen would do. If you see wrongdoing, call 911, for mm-hmm. heaven's sakes. That to me is the most egregious error in all of this, that no one who had suspicions about Foley ever said, you know, this might be illegal. Let's call the cops.
When we see that, we read the text messages and we see the we read the words, the conversations, and you see people like George Bush coming out and saying that Dennis Hassert is a family man. He is a coach. He is a grandfather. He's a good guy. Therefore, I read in that we're supposed to just understand that he either should have done something or that if he didn't do anything, we should understand that he didn't do anything and forgive mm-hmm. him for that. Do we see the same type of thing happening with the priests as well, that people come out to defend people immediately?
Exactly. And somehow, I don't know how, I don't mean to sound trite, but we have to come to grips with the simple fact that bad people do good things and good people do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny Hastert might be the most stand-up guy on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But again, on his watch, kids were hurt. And he needs to understand that. He needs to publicly fess up to it. He needs to be sorry about it and express that sorrow, and he needs to, you know, experience some consequences. We just can't say a lifetime of good outweighs a criminal act. There has to be consequences for wrongdoing, and that prevents future wrongdoing. It's not mean-spirited. It's not vengeful. It's simply common sense.
Mm. David Clousey, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Listen, folks, I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you took a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches,
There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny,